This week on Vanderbilt Internal Medicine Residency Podcast.
Vic, I heard you brought us two new trials looking at oral versus IV antibiotics in two different types of infections.
Both the POET and OVIVA trial showed non-inferiority of oral antibiotics when compared to IV antibiotics for treatment of infective endocarditis and bone and joint infections.
But will these studies change your practice?
This podcast is made by and for our internal medicine residents to enhance our educational experience. The content, while edited by residents, is not verified by host or speakers, and we are not content experts on these topics. The content provided by this podcast is not intended and should not be construed as medical advice. It should not be used to diagnose or treat any medical condition. We attempt to avoid use of opinion, but all opinions are our own and not representative of the University Medical Center. Please keep this in mind as you enjoy our podcast.
Welcome
to the Vanderbilt Internal Medicine Podcast.
Welcome back to the Vanderbilt Internal Medicine Podcast.
It is exactly June 30th, sort of like Christmas Eve in an academic hospital.
That's one way of putting it. It's definitely an exciting day.
Casey, it's been a while since we've recorded. How are you doing?
Yes, I'm doing well. Staying out of public, and that's been part of the reason we've been silent for so long, but it's good to be back.
Yeah, when the start of the new academic year, it'll bring a lot of our conferences back in full swing, and we're hopeful to start pushing out our regular episodes again with our new chiefs, Blake and Lee, and hopefully getting back on a regular schedule. But before that, we've got a special guest here for another installment of the Q-Files.
One of our very new third-year residents.
NGY3.
It's crazy. Welcome, Vic.
Well, thanks for having me, guys. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, we're really excited to have you here to talk about a couple different trials. But before we do that, just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Well, I am an internal medicine resident about 5.5 hours away from being a PGY3 at Vanderbilt. I grew up in New Orleans, went to college at Harvard, went to med school at Penn in Philadelphia, and now I've been in Nashville for the last 2 years and really looking forward to starting third year. I really feel like this is an exciting time.
And then just tell our listeners, what's in your future career plans?
I am planning to be a general internist. Depending on the week or month that you ask me, I'll go back and forth on whether I want to do outpatient versus inpatient. But I definitely know I want to do something in medical education, working with medical students and residents in the future. So something within that field.
Fantastic. Vic, before we get started, with tomorrow being July 1st and our new interns arriving, we wanted to know if you had any advice for them.
Ooh, sure. Always an exciting time. I really feel like it injects new energy into our program. I would definitely advise them to never worry alone. Everyone here wants to help you if you are worried about anyone. Remember that notes don't save lives, so you can spend more time at the bedside. And there's always Diet Coke on 8 North.
Man, that's a powerful quote, man.
Those are good ones. I don't know if I have anything that profound. My best advice for the interns would be don't spend all your time writing notes. Have good time management and make sure that you get home and enjoy your family, friends, and have a real life. And also, don't spend all your meal money at ABP. It's very expensive.
Yeah, I would just say always ask question of why. If your team is doing something that you don't understand, don't just play along like you do. You're here to learn and we're here to teach. And so anytime there's something you don't understand, be brave and stop the team and say, why are we doing this? So that you can learn it and know it for the next time. So the articles you bring us, you know, at first glance are infectious diseases, but you know, if you end up being a hospitalist, this is going to really be in your
Absolutely.
Best interest to have this data on hand.
And I'm always happy to see a little bit of ID swing into our podcast.
You know, one of the things that comes up pretty frequently when we're on a general medicine rotation is someone that requires a long course of IV antibiotics. IV antibiotics are a huge strain on both patients and healthcare systems. I understand, Vic, that you want to talk to us a little bit more about why it is that these long antibiotic courses are needed and the data behind it.
I actually came across these articles last year. They were both published in the same issue of New England Journal, and it was one of the times that I skimmed the table of contents instead of putting it on my shelf without looking at it. And these two caught my eye. For a long time, I wondered, but did not really have a clear answer, why they hadn't seemed to have changed our practice. Hopefully today we'll talk about some of the ways in which they fall short of changing our practice and some of the ways that I think they should and ought to.
So just to introduce our listeners, what are the two topics that we're talking about and the names of the trials? And we can just kind of dive into each one separately.
Absolutely. So the two trials came out in January 2019. First that we're going to talk about is called Partial Oral versus Intravenous Antibiotic Treatment of Endocarditis, or POET. So for the remainder of this podcast, POET equals the endocarditis article. And the other is the Oral versus Intravenous Antibiotics for Bone and Joint Infection, or OVIVA. So for the remainder of the podcast, OVIVA equals bone and joint infection.
Perfect. And these are two problems that we see people on IV antibiotics for a very, very long time.
Absolutely.
I'm sure that's a problem everywhere. So hopefully very relevant for us.
Absolutely. I'm certain that everyone listening to this podcast with clinical medical experience has had a patient that's been stuck in the hospital waiting to figure out how they're going to get IV antibiotics for 6 weeks for either of these conditions or a different condition. One of the questions I was hoping to answer was whether there's an alternative to that.
So without further ado, let's go ahead and start the Q files on both the POET and OVIVA trials.
So let's start with the POET trial and talk about this trial investigating oral and IV antibiotics for endocarditis. So the POET trial was a study that took place in Denmark and was seeking to answer the question of whether oral antibiotics were non-inferior to IV antibiotics for the treatment of bacterial endocarditis. And specifically, they were studying left-sided endocarditis. This trial ended up enrolling about 400 patients. And before I delve too deeply into it, I'll give a spoiler alert where the trial had fairly strict criteria for inclusion and actually was a trial where patients were referred to the trial by their providers. So there was very decent possibility of referral bias. So the patients that ended up in the trial were approximately in their late 60s, ended up about 77% male, and all of them had left-sided infective endocarditis that was caused by either Staph aureus, Streptococcus, Aefecalis, or Coag-negative Staph. The trial was a double randomized controlled trial. It was not blinded to the patients due to obvious difficulties around placebo administering IV antibiotics, but the outcomes were judged by a blinded committee. So patients were diagnosed with infective endocarditis with microbiology matching those bacteria that I mentioned before, and they all had to receive at least 10 days of IV antibiotics before the time of randomization. Following randomization, they either completed IV antibiotics and remained in the hospital, which is a key point there, until they were completed, rather than our practice, which is often discharging patients to complete antibiotics to home, on home infusion, or to a skilled nursing facility. The other arm of the trial was able to complete therapy with oral antibiotics. They did require two different agents with two different mechanisms of actions and had outpatient follow-up around 2 to 3 times per week for the duration of their antibiotic therapy.
That's a lot.
That's yes, indeed.
Strenuous. Vic, you mentioned that the people who were treated with IV antibiotics stayed in the hospital and how that could potentially be a problem with this study. Can you expand on that a little bit more?
I don't know for sure why they had the patients stay in the hospital, but I suspect, as we'll come to talk about how they monitored patients' response to treatment, it was to ensure as many variables were controlled as possible, which is one of the areas in which I think it limits its generalizability.
Absolutely.
To our practice. Even in patients that are remaining on IV antibiotics, as is our practice for endocarditis, we don't often require that they stay in the hospital for 5-6 weeks. And the average duration of antibiotic treatment for all comers in the study was 5 weeks.
So to summarize, we've got 400 patients. Everybody gets 10 days of IV antibiotics, and then you get randomized to an arm of either completion of therapy with IV antibiotics in the hospital or oral antibiotics with very, very close follow-up as an outpatient. What are we measuring as the primary outcome here, Vic?
So the primary outcome was measured at 6 months and was a composite of all-cause mortality, septic emboli, relapse of bacteremia with the causative bacteria, and unplanned cardiac surgery.
And overall, what were the results of the study?
Great question. So as a non-inferiority study, remember that what they're looking to ascertain is whether oral arm of treatment was equivalent or at least not inferior to IV treatment. The outcome was similar in both groups. The composite endpoint occurred at 12 versus 9% in the IV versus oral group and met non-inferiority criteria. This means that the confidence interval for the outcomes overlapped zero and there was no statistical significant difference between the two groups.
Vic, you sounded so pessimistic about this trial, but those results sound very optimistic.
It's a great point, and that's exactly how I felt when I first read the study and then looked around our hospital and saw that I was still having all these patients stuck in the hospital, waiting for PICC lines, continuing IV antibiotics for 6 weeks at a time. And I thought, why am I the only one that knows the evidence here? Turns out not to be the case. The biggest area in which I feel this study falls short of changing our practice is the generalizability. The population here is very selected and very different from our own population. So not only is there a referral bias in terms of patients that were referred to the study and thought to be good candidates, while the inclusion-exclusion criteria weren't so narrow, the only one of note that I saw would be that patients that were thought to be non-adherent or have difficulty with adherence were excluded. The end population was very different from our own population. I suspect that this has to do with referral bias and selection bias for the patients that were referred to the study. And in fact, many patients were screened out before randomization. That is to say, a lot of patients were maybe referred to the study and then excluded for various reasons. Some of the areas in which the population differs that I really want to highlight is, one, there was zero cases of methicillin-resistant Staph aureus in this trial. That was not by design for inclusion-exclusion. It just happened. There was methicillin-sensitive Staph aureus, but zero of MRSA. Not sure why, but that clearly is different from our own patient population, which in which many patients with endocarditis have it because of MRSA. Additionally, out of the 400 patients, 5 had a history of IV substance use. The population here was not very chronically ill, relatively speaking. About 65% had no other chronic medical conditions, meaning things like diabetes, CKD, coronary artery disease. Again, that feels very different to the population that I see.
So you're definitely painting a picture that this population just isn't generalizable to the general population, and that we can't really use this data as of yet.
But I guess in the off chance that you had a fairly young person with no comorbidities and no IV drug use who happens to have a non-MRSA endocarditis, that maybe you could think about it.
Yeah, as long as it's on the left side of his heart and only due to Staph, Strep, Efecalis, and coag-negative Staph. So again, very narrow group.
Okay. On a Wednesday in February.
Exactly. Yeah. When Mars is in the third house. I will say that one area where I do think this may change my practice, and this is actually relevant to a conference that we had just this week, is around the AMA discharge. This is an area that is obviously fraught with legal, ethical concerns, but unfortunately we do have scenarios where our patients are wanting to leave the hospital even when we would advise them to do otherwise. And I think that while there's a lot of discussion around the best way to manage that discharge, and I do think that coming up with an oral regimen of antibiotics as a sort of harm reduction strategy is at least somewhat supported by the evidence here. And so it's something to think about. I would probably try to, if time allows, get your IDE colleagues assistance with coming up with the regimen for that before kind of going out there and prescribing linezolid and rifampin together for someone going out the door. But
yeah, that's a great point, though. I mean, you know, it's you're saying it's not going to be the standard of care, but there's at least some evidence here that maybe it's better than nothing.
Exactly. Right? And that it's not inferior in some population. Much more study is needed in a more generalized and larger population. But I think it's worth considering.
Yeah, maybe in the future, this will be our standard of care.
It may be.
Which sort of brings us into the next trial that you've brought for us, Vic, the OVIVA trial, which is going to be looking at bone and joint infections. So let's just kind of reset and talk about the methodology behind this trial, who it included, and how the patients were selected, and so forth.
So the OVIVA trial, or the oral versus intravenous antibiotics for bone and joint infection, was a study that sought to answer the question of whether oral antibiotics could be non-inferior to IV antibiotics for patients that had bone and joint infections requiring extended antibiotic therapy.
Okay, so same type of questions, just now instead of endocarditis, we're talking about orthopedic infections.
Exactly.
Got it. Go for it.
So this was a study that was done in the UK and enrolled about 1,000 patients that had bone and joint infections. The study randomized the patients in an open-label way, again, barriers to placebo for IV antibiotics, with the outcomes judged by a blinded committee. There was about 1,000 patients, as I mentioned, about 64% male. The average age was in the early 60s. 93% of them had infections that had surgical debridement concurrent with antibiotic initiation, and around 60% of them actually had hardware infections as well. Randomization occurred as soon as they were enrolled in the study, but no more than 7 days after they had operative debridement, and they were randomized to either oral antibiotics or IV antibiotics for the first 6 weeks of antibiotic therapy. Many of them went on to have longer courses of antibiotics beyond those 6 weeks and were no longer confined to one or the other. Unlike the POET trial, there was no mandated period of time during which patients had IV antibiotics at the beginning of the trial period.
But in comparison to POET, most of these patients did have some sort of surgical procedure prior to starting antibiotics. So
that's correct.
I think that's important to note.
That's correct. And also an area that sometimes differs from our own practice. There's many patients that have had osteo that end up not being surgical candidates for various reasons.
So the OVIVA trial with over 1,000 patients, 93% having surgery, either receiving 6 weeks of IV or oral antibiotics. What were the primary outcomes that they looked at in this study?
So the primary outcomes for this study was what they defined as definitive treatment failure. This was followed at 1 year. So they had the blinded committee that I mentioned earlier adjudicating outcomes, and each patient was categorized into definite treatment failure, probable, possible, or no treatment failure. And this was assessed at 6 weeks, 6 months, and 1 year. The primary outcome was definite treatment failure within that first year. Secondary outcomes included those other three categories, as well as early discontinuation of therapy and serious adverse events.
Vic, since we're assigning these subjective levels or degrees of treatment success or failure, how did they decide what was definitive versus probable? Was it by an expert opinion, or what are we looking at? Was there a grading scale?
Great question. So they did create certain criteria to assist these experts in categorizing the patients. So for instance, for definite treatment failure, that meant persistence of a draining sinus tract or pus at the site. It could also include persistent infection with the same causative microorganism on a biopsy, deep tissue culture or blood culture, or pathology with inflammatory infiltrate at the site. And primarily this further assessment that prompted these testings was driven by patient symptoms. So for example, a patient having persistent pain at the site would undergo testing as part of their usual care outside of the 6 week parameters or within it, and end up having this further testing that put them in the treatment failure category.
Tell us about the results of the Aviva trial.
So similar to POET, the primary area and question of interest is whether oral antibiotics could be non-inferior to IV antibiotics. This ended up meeting that criteria. The primary outcome occurred 14 versus 13% of the time in IV versus oral antibiotics during that first year. There's an interesting data analysis they did during the final data analysis where the primary intent was intention to treat, but for any patient that was lost to follow-up, which was a relatively small number, they did a sensitivity analysis by assuming the worst case. What that means is if someone was lost to follow-up and was on IV antibiotics, they assumed that they succeeded. And so if someone was lost to follow-up and they were on oral antibiotics, they assumed that they had failed those antibiotics. So even with that, filling in the missing data with the worst case for their question, it still met criteria for non-inferiority.
So let me just make sure I understand that. So pretty much anyone that got lost to follow-up, if they were on IV, they assumed that they got better. And if they were on oral, they assumed they got worse to try to create the worst case scenario.
Exactly right. Which was an interesting analysis that I thought certainly helped convince me about the outcomes of the study.
Vic, were there any other big differences between the two groups?
Great question. Among the secondary outcomes was IV complications. Catheter complications, as you would imagine, occurred more often, around 9% of the time in folks that were randomized to the IV group compared to 1% in the oral group. How did that 1% even happen? Folks that are on the oral antibiotic arm of the trial were allowed to have short, less than 5 day periods of IV antibiotics for alternate diagnoses that occurred.
So similarly to the POET trial, the OVIVA trial also showed non-inferiority of orals to IV. Why do you think there's a little bit more promise in this trial, and why does this maybe seem to make a little bit more change? Tell us about the differences.
I think there are a few areas in which the OVIVA trial has advantages over the POET trial. Number one, it's a larger study, over 1,000 patients, and it had a more broad base that didn't require referral into the study. So a bit less of possible referral bias. The population still is somewhat different from our own. They were relatively well chronically compared to many of our patients. So for example, the rates of diabetes were at 20%, the rates of coronary artery disease were around 8%, and the rates of renal disease were 2%. That's a lot less than our rates of one-liners. Exactly. Now that said, the other area I think OVIVA offers a benefit over POET is a slightly more robust basis for the study and comfort with oral antibiotics for osteomyelitis, or rather for bone and joint infections. What I mean by that is the options for treating orally are much better for the treatment of these infections. Specifically, the quinolones, while they have black box warning after black box warning, and we are shying away from them for many indications, they do have excellent oral bioavailability that's equivalent to IV, and they have excellent penetration of the bone. So specifically, the fact that they are often available for treatment of bugs that cause bone and joint infections, that is another benefit in terms of clinical comfort. That has nothing to do with the design of the trial or the outcomes or the statistical analysis, but in terms of comfort and ease of putting this into practice, I think that's a benefit.
And I would think, too, that it's also a lot scarier to have a treatment failure in someone with endocarditis versus someone with maybe a chronic osteomyelitis as far as the acuity of their illness.
Absolutely. I think that is another big area of or big barrier for practice implementation of oral antibiotics for these indications. If someone is failing oral antibiotics with osteomyelitis, as you mentioned, first of all, they'll feel it. and they'll report it, and they'll feel bad, so they'll probably seek care. The complications of those infections can be severe. We've all learned that septic arthritis is a surgical emergency, but generally, it does prompt the patient to present to care. Providers feel more comfortable that they'll be able to catch a treatment failure in time. Whereas bacterial endocarditis, if failing oral antibiotics, may present with very vague symptoms, if any symptoms at all, and could result in a severe complication in a flash through a septic emboli to the brain, the lungs, elsewhere. So I think that those are big barriers to implementation of the practice for endocarditis compared to implementation of the practice for bone and joint infections.
So Vic, give us a one-liner of what the POET trial showed us and whether or not you think this is practice changing.
Sure. So, one-liner. The POET trial was a randomized controlled trial that compared oral versus IV antibiotics for the treatment of left-sided bacterial endocarditis with very specific inclusion criteria, very specific bugs, and very, very close follow-up. And they were a population that's fairly different from our own with no rates of MRSA. Ultimately, given the severity and the speed at which a severe complication from bacterial endocarditis can occur and the relatively less generalizable results of the POET trial, I don't feel like it is practice changing at this time. I think it is promising and is an area for more study. And I think it also could inform some practices in less than ideal situations, such as patients who are leaving against medical advice when the official recommendation is for prolonged IV antibiotics.
And now moving to the OVIVA trial, can you go ahead and give us some take-home points and if you think this study will be practice-changing?
Okay, so one-liner on the OVIVA trial. Very similar trial, enrolling over 1,000 patients and comparing oral versus intravenous antibiotics for at least the first 6 weeks of treatment for bone and joint infections. This trial had very high rates of surgical debridement for source control of infections. And with source control, patients had equivalent clearance rate of their infections at 1 year between the oral and IV antibiotic group. Interesting takeaways from this study are that patients ended up being on antibiotics for quite a long while, actually. While the study was primarily controlling the first 6 weeks of therapy, the median duration of antibiotics of any kind was around 11 weeks, which I think that a lot of us that work in the inpatient setting are not seeing that decision at 6 weeks to extend antibiotic courses, but our ID colleagues are frequently doing that in the outpatient follow-up setting. Admittedly, similar to the POET trial, this population is not quite as similar to our own, given low rates of chronic disease. But I think that the larger study with less strict inclusion criteria and no requirement for referral, as well as what Casey pointed out, lower acuity and severity of failure of treatment, allows us to feel comfortable implementing this. In fact, in speaking with some of our ID colleagues, we do have an oral antibiotic protocol for treatment of bone and joint infections here at Vanderbilt.
So I guess this is a good time to ask, Vic, if the OVIVA trial will change your practice?
It's a great question. I think for me, it sort of will. By that, I mean...
Hedging a little bit there.
I have to hedge. I think it will change my practice in what I expect, but as we know, often we are relying on our infectious disease consultants in the hospital to make this decision for us. I do think this is absolutely practice changing for our infectious disease consultants who are making decisions to transition patients from IV to oral antibiotics for this indication all the time. And the fact that there is already a protocol in place to switch patients from IV to oral antibiotics, admittedly after 2 weeks of IV antibiotics at Vanderbilt, is promising. I think with further study, we could reach a point where these patients may not need IV antibiotics at all, given adequate source control.
Yeah, I think both of these studies that you brought to us today are really interesting in that they're looking at questions that we've sort of don't think about. We just know that these types of infections, we just give 6 weeks of IV antibiotics. And, you know, they're challenging things that we've just always done. And I think looking at this more and more will help us feel more and more comfortable with putting people in oral antibiotics because they're so much easier for patients and they're easier for providers and for healthcare systems that, you know, will reduce SNF admissions and hospital days. I'm really intrigued by this. And, you know, for a future hospitalist, Vic, I'm sure you're really interested to see what else comes out from this.
Definitely. And I think that for all internal medicine providers, another area that I would highlight from this study is the importance of outpatient follow-up. As we talked about, patients can report their symptoms if they're failing oral antibiotics and they have more time to do so before suffering fatal or severe consequences in bone and joint infections. So whether as a hospitalist or a general internist, I think these are going to be very intriguing areas of study moving forward. And I hope that we one day reach a time where we will never be waiting for the pick to be placed before discharge with home infusion.
One day. Vic, thank you so much for joining us today and kind of talking us through these trials.
Yeah, we really appreciate it.
Happy to be here. Thanks for inviting me. And major thanks to our now former medical chief resident, Jameson Norwood, who is back in the world of infectious diseases and provided some expert opinion to help guide this discussion.
We want to again thank Vic for joining us today. And just as we're wrapping up this podcast, wanted to briefly bring up for our residents the new recovery trial that's coming out of the UK because it's such a practice-changing article in the treatment of COVID-19. So this trial called Recovery is still in preprint, and so there's still a lot that's going to come out about it. However, the preliminary results compared dexamethasone 6 milligrams given once daily for up to 10 days versus the standard of care in the treatment of COVID-19 with the primary outcome of 28-day mortality. And patients that were placed specifically on a ventilator, just cutting to the chase, the patients that were on a ventilator had an improvement in their mortality from 40% to 29%. This is a reduction in mortality of about one third. These results were not as robust when all patients with COVID-19 were treated. However, it was still statistically significant, but this supports that patients with more severe disease are more likely to benefit from dexamethasone, which just intuitively makes sense. And therefore, there are several large centers that are now considering the use of dexamethasone 6 milligrams once daily for 10 days for patients who are requiring supplemental oxygen and especially who are on invasive mechanical ventilation. And again, that's the recovery trial, which we will for sure cover again once it's out of preprint and into publication.
Thanks again for being here with us today, Vic. Stay tuned for our next episode.